And I've gotten as far as chapter 4. And so I was thinking this evening, I'll give you a really simple, but in an overview tomorrow, more detailed overview of what comes before chapter 4. In the first three chapters of the second canto, Shukadeva Goswami begins to speak. In the whole first canto, Shukadeva Goswami is just, he doesn't appear to the last. Krishna wants to know two things. What is the duty of a person in general? Dharma, what is the duty of life? And, particularly, what is the duty of someone who is about to die, a subset of everybody? The second question is, what is that subject matter that one should hear and chant and remember? And the first three chapters are addressing those two questions. He concludes, I'm going to skip the sequence that he goes through, but he concludes that devotional service is what one should do. This human form of life is meant for that purpose. And when death notice comes, devotional service, that's unmixed with hopes for fruitive and elevation or advancement in life, or mixed with speculative knowledge, simply engaging oneself in loving service unto the personality of God, that this is one's duty. And the subject matter that one should hear about is about Krishna. Krishna Katha. Krishna Kathamritam. The nectarian pastimes and description of Krishna's name, his qualities, his form, the loving exchanges with his devotees, his own personality. And this should be exclusively done. There's no other shelter that one requires, no other process or procedure, or even amongst the recommended elevated activities found within the Vedas. They're not required. In fact, specifically he recommends one should not do them. One should take exclusive shelter in service to Krishna. There's lots of wonderful detail. But that's the essence. And chapter 3 ends with the sages of Naishwaranya who are hearing this description about Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit's exchange. They're hearing it from Sutta in very excited tone. They say, what happened next? What did Maharaj Pariksit do when he heard that answer from Shukadeva Goswami? Because he's such a qualified person, and the speaker is such a qualified speaker. Surely something happened after that message. Please tell, please tell. The topics about Krishna that he heard from Shukadeva Goswami. commence chapter 3. Chapter 4, I've spoken so far through verses 1 through 8, and the section is 1 through 10. It's what happened internally to Maharaj Pariksit. As he heard the message and assimilated the message, basically three things are described. Before he spoke, Maharaj Pariksit, he fixed his mind without deviation upon the Supreme Lord. The next thing that's mentioned, he specifically felt himself completely detached from the circumstance of his life, the circumstance, I'm about to die. And the other side, I've been a king. The experience of detachment from temporary comes from attachment to eternal, to the Supreme Lord. And the third thing that happened was his eagerness to hear more awakened very strongly. This is discussed in the first canto. The fruit of anything that's beneficial, religious activity that is to be done, the real test of the fruit of that is that Vasudeva Katha Ruchi Syan Mahasevaya Vipra Punyatirta Nishevanati. The benefit of, the real benefit to be derived from religious activity is not elevation to the heavenly planets or achieving pious activity so that one will prosper bountifully in this life and the next and so forth, or even liberation, but it's attraction for the message of the personality of Godhead. And so that's what happens with Shukadeva Goswami. Excuse me, Maharaj Pariksit. With great eagerness, now he's, it's very important to bear in mind what he's been told is Krishna Katha is what you should hear about. So the first subject matter about Krishna that he wants to hear about is in relation to the Lord's interaction with his various energies. Specifically, he wants to know about creation. How does he do it? Not exactly, you know, what's the technology, but to a certain degree, yes. The Lord is inconceivable, and his potencies are inconceivable. And so to understand how he the inconceivable Lord acts with his inconceivable potencies is going to be inconceivable. But you're the most qualified speaker, and you can disclose these things. And I'm really eager to hear it. So can you explain how this happens? Just this morning in our Chicago temple, there was a verse from the 8th chapter of this second canto. The verse is entitled, or the chapter is entitled, Purusha Sukta Confirmed. Purusha Sukta are verses coming from Rig Veda. They're very classical or standard Vedic mantras for glorifying the Supreme Lord in his Purusha avatar form. Purusha avatar means the expansion of the personality of Godhead from the Vaikuntha realm that interacts with the field of the material energy for the purpose of creation. So, Maha Mahavishnu, Garvadakshai Vishnu, and Chirodakshai Vishnu, these three. They're the Purusha avatars, plural. And one is expanding universes from this transcendental body. Streams of universes pouring through his transcendental body as he exhales, and then they're withdrawn as he inhales, and there's resting period, and then again expanding as he exhales. That's a pretty powerful spiritual body. And his breathing period is very long. And his retention of his breath is also very long, in equal duration. Anyway, that's Mahavishnu. And then entering within each one of those universes, another Purusha avatar expansion, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, who is present within the universe, expands the universe, and then he expands one more time within every atom of the universe as Paramagha or Chirodakshay Vishnu. These three are the Purusha avatars. So the Purusha Sukta prayers are glorifying Paramapurusha or Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, who we're going to hear in this purport for this evening, how he's involved in the expansions of him, the Chatur Vyuha expansions. In the spiritual world, there's Aniruddha, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Chatur Vyuha expansions. They exist in the spiritual world. From the second Sankarshan expansion comes Mahavishnu. From that Mahavishnu comes Garvadakshay Vishnu, comes Chirodakshay Vishnu. The expansions of the Sankarshan of the Chatur Vyuha in the spiritual world. So this Purusha Sukta, Lord Narayan is being glorified, the Lord of Vaikuntha, and the function that he, an expansion of him, performs for the purpose of material creation. So what if this is disclosing the relationship, the same question is being asked in chapter 4 is again discussed in chapter 8. So it's an important, large topic of spiritual understanding. What's the relationship of matter and spirit to the controller of both, in simple language? Or as we were discussing this morning, it is a theological mystery how something material comes from something that's all spiritual. And there's different ways of addressing that apparent impossibility or complication or contradiction or different theologies have different ways of addressing. And the Bhagavatam has a specific way of addressing. And it's the same as the Bhagavad Gita's way of addressing this relationship of the material energy to the source of the material energy, the source of the spiritual energy, matter and spirit, the controller of both. And that relationship is an inconceivable one, just as Maharaj Pritchard says it is. But he also says that Shukadeva Goswami is qualified to explain it. Even it's inconceivable. Because it's a matter of spiritual realization, it's not a matter of conceiving within the mind. It's descending knowledge, it's not attained by ascending capacity of mental speculation. And if one doesn't approach this knowledge of the relationship between matter and spirit and the controller of both, then one isn't going to understand it. We're going to hear that this evening's purport. Very, in fact, emphatically expressed. Because it's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Bhaktyamam avijanati abhinyas chasmi tattvata. It's Krishna says that by devotional service he can be understood. And not otherwise. Not by mental speculation. I'll read the verse. There's an extra book if someone wants one. Chapter 4, text number 10. Actually, 9 has no purport, so we're going to make 9 and 10 in chapter 4. This is Shukadeva Goswami asking a question of Maharaj Pariksit. Excuse me. Maharaj Pariksit asking a question of Shukadeva Goswami. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is one, and whether he alone acts with the modes of material nature or simultaneously expands in many forms or expands consecutively to direct the modes of material nature. Kindly clear up all these doubtful inquiries, because you are not only vastly learned in Vedic literatures and self-realized in transcendence, but also being a great devotee of the Lord, and therefore as good as the Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada takes this purport in the direction of the method of understanding transcendental knowledge. Let me do a summary. I'll go through some other things. But the method of transcendental knowledge, Prabhupada begins the purport by paraphrasing one verse from Brahma Samhita. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhaktam. By the Vedas, one can know the absolute truth. But if one approaches the Vedas by Gyan, or by speculative method, Vedeshu durlabham, very difficult. Adurlabham atma bhaktam. By the process of bhakti, very easily, adurlabham, without difficulty, one can realize the Supreme. And the Supreme, mind you, is inconceivable. So the verse begins advaitam achutim anadim anantarupam adhyam puranam purusham navayoganamcha vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhaktam govindam adi purusham tamaham vajami. Advaitam achutim anadi anantarupam. He has unlimited forms, although he's one. And each of those unlimited forms, they're of non-dual substance. Advaitam achutam, he's infallible. Living entity is chuta, or fallen. And the Supreme Lord is achuta. He never succumbs to anything else. He's the supreme powerful being. Achuta. Anadim. He has no beginnings. Anantarupa. Well, the verse is describing the nature of these features are something that, just like Krishna speaks of in Bhagavad Gita, when chapter 12, of Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna asks Krishna, which do you recommend? This path of fixing one's mind on the impersonal feature or worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Krishna recommends worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the best. This other method of trying to fix the mind on that which is formless and has no apparent quality or feature is very troublesome, fixing the mind on something that you can't fix your mind upon. Very troublesome. But when the form is transcendental and the qualities are transcendental and the position of the Supreme Lord is disclosed through this descending process, then adorable abhavakta. So, on scriptural authority, then Prabhupada goes through why Maharaj Parikshit, it's very important to understand the platform that Maharaj Parikshit has already attained in the previous verses to this. He's already on the topmost platform. His mind is not moved by duality. He's fixed, undeviatingly fixed in consciousness. And there's no trace of attachment remaining. So he's already there where there is. He's already there. So his inquiry is not just to pass the time. In other words, not, I want some more information, please. What he's looking for is transcendental realization of this relationship between God and his energies. And when one hears in the state of consciousness that Maharaj Parikshit is in, from a person of the state of consciousness of Shukadeva Goswami, it's not just information. It's realizing his relationship with the Supreme and the Supreme's relationship with matter, which is an inconceivable subject. It's already been declared. But one can enter into it through devotional service. Otherwise it remains a mystery. And not here, but elsewhere, Prabhupada explains that the mystery of devotional service is the medium of devotion through the medium of the spiritual master. So there's Shukadeva Goswami who has realized this subject by the mercy of Vyas, his father. He was already, before Vyas explained Srimad Bhagavatam to him, he was already on the spiritual platform. He was already come and realized. Advaita Gyan he had. When he heard from Vyasadeva, he then became a devotee. So that's what's being said. You're not only learned, because Vyas also, not only Vyas knew the conclusion of the Vedas, he compiled them. He was an empowered incarnation of the Lord to compile them. There was no mistake in his position of knowledge, but in the first canto, it's described that he was feeling that same feeling that we all know too well. There's something missing. I don't know what that something is, but there's something missing. I won't say where, but I was traveling and visiting some family, a devotee family, and they had, the husband and wife had slackened significantly in their spiritual practices because they became very involved in their career and so forth, and children, and there's something about money and family that takes a lot of energy. So they slackened in their spiritual practices. And then one of them shared with me that their mother-in-law said, the father-in-law and mother-in-law are both very well-established professionals. And their mother-in-law said, you know, I'm X number of years old and all the things I wanted in my life, I got them. Career, position, money, wonderful children, nice home, wonderful friends in my social circle, and da-da-da-da-da. And all those things are there. But there's something missing. I haven't made the connection with God that as a young person I very idealistically cherished. It didn't happen. And then this devotee was sharing with me, I don't want that to happen to me. But then one has to, like, more than wish it doesn't happen to you, one has to do something with that concern before it's too late, like Dhritarashtra or something, wanting his kingdom and having it then losing it. Anyway. There's something missing, feeling. Narada explained to him what that something missing was. That something missing was a very clear, as a literary person, describing the connection with the personality of Godhead through all of the Vedas that he had compiled. Focusing on that subject matter. So he instructed him to write Srimad Bhagavatam with that specific purpose, which he did, and then he instructed it to Shukadeva Goswami, who's now sharing it with the great king, Maharaj Parikshit, who's fixed. He's eagerly wanting to hear for the sake of realizing the relationship that all things have with the Supreme. Which is very important for those of us that are in this world, because surrounding us is this vast ocean of material energy. Any direction you turn in, up, down, sideways, left and right, below you and above you, in the 10 directions, it's material energy. We're a tiny spiritual particle surrounded in, not just, you know, up to here, it's all over. Material energy. And what's the relationship of that material energy with its source if we don't have not just theoretical understanding, but practical realization of that? How are we going to go to the next place? How are we going to not see it in the wrong way and be attached to it? Attached to it in the wrong way. So it's a very important beginning question for Maharaj Parikshit to ask, and very important chapters are dedicated to this subject, and that's what this weekend is going to be about, so hope you like the subject matter. But this is a little bit of like a prompt as to why it's very important. And how, what's the way to enter into this subject matter so that we can not just have more information and a little information basket as we go around through life collecting information, but realization, practical realization. Prabhupada writes in the purport that Maharaj Parikshit admitted in the previous verse that the Lord is inconceivable, even for the greatest learned scholars. Of course, this is stated in the first verse of the Bhagavatam. The Lord is inconceivable. itaratashchartesu abhidya swatene brahma hridaya alikavaye muyanti yad suraya. Even the demigods are muyanti, they're bewildered by the energy of the Supreme Lord. Even they're in charge of regulating it and controlling it. They themselves also become bewildered by it from time to time, because it's very powerful, and the spirit of enjoyment is very powerful. So it's very easy, even for good people, even for brilliant people, even for demigods, to fall into the spirit of trying to enjoy the material energy. And when that spirit of enjoyment of material energy is prominent, our spiritual reality becomes obscured. Self-realization disappears, and the modes of material nature take over, and look out. So, Maharaj Pariksit indicates, even for great demigods, this is a very difficult subject matter, but you should be Deva Swami. You have the capacity to explain it. So it will be. Yeah. Maharaj Pariksit was a king, and from childhood, he's the grandson of the Pandavas. He went to lots of Bhagavad Gita classes. In other words, he had training. He was well educated. He didn't know what the answer to the exam question was, so he could get an A. He could get an A. Vyas, he also got an A, and he even got the certificate from Narada. He got an A for knowing. But knowing is not enough, is the point. Why is Maharaj Pariksit asking? You know, 7 days, he's a goner. He's out of there. Why is he asking about this subject matter, this material energy, and how does it work? How is it working under the control of the Lord by his inconceivable ways? Why is he asking that? Because, in the answer, Prabhupada's surprise, the reason is clear. Not only was Shukadeva Goswami vastly learned in the Vedic literatures, but he was also a great self-realized soul and a powerful devotee of the Lord. A powerful devotee of the Lord is, by the grace of the Lord, more powerful than the Lord himself. Not more powerful, but he exhibits power in a way that the Lord wants to draw attention to his devotee. So, two examples are given. Ramchandra, to cross to Lanka, he had to build a bridge. Arama didn't have to build a bridge, he just jumped over it. And, you know, had a couple battles on the way. Jumped back. Ram had to build a bridge. This is Ramchandra wanted to glorify his devotee. That's the idea. And Durvasa Muni was so powerful, he could travel without any craft all the way to Brahmaloka and to Lord Shiva's abode and Mount Kailash and all the way to Sweta Dweep, spiritual planet within this material realm. But Maharaj Ambarish was more powerful than Durvasa Muni, because the Sudarshan Chakra that was pursuing him, he couldn't stop. Even the Lord said he can't stop, but Maharaj Ambarish can stop. This is a mystery, but it's an easily resolved mystery when one understands the nature of the Lord. One will not understand the nature of the Lord except through the medium of devotional service, otherwise it's too mysterious to understand. The mystery is that he's a loving personality, and when one places oneself in this fully surrendered position, the Lord subordinates himself to his devotee. Although he is the supreme independent, he gives strength, power, capacity, ability, everything to the devotee so that the devotee is above him. He likes to serve his devotees, and the devotees like to serve him. That's called love. And the medium of a loving relationship is the medium of loving service. So, the inquisitiveness of, say the same thing, slightly different, but it's the same thing. Maharaj Pariksit doesn't just want information. He wants a relationship with the Personality and Godhead. And the relationship with the Personality and Godhead is through the relationship with Shukadeva Swami. And the relationship with Shukadeva Swami is by understanding not just information, but through realization of the Supreme Lord, how he works with his energies. And among them, there's the material creation has two, the external energy and the marginal energy. How does it work? It's spiritual science. It's not for the purpose, let's say, for example, of learning how, because I've been involved in the subject of late, it's not for the sake of learning how the fundamental building blocks of material life work, how do the strands of DNA include all the codes of information that make up how life happens the way that it happens, so that you can do genetic engineering and then, you know, cure diseases or make corn that tastes better or something. Make more money by genetic engineering. Or at least learn a living through research and genetic technology. Not for that purpose. Not for God projects. One of our devotees calls this kind of pursuit of higher knowledge is one kind of God project. But everybody has their God project. Anyway. He doesn't want to know for that reason. He wants to know for the reason of his relationship with the Personality of Godhead, because it's a wonderful thing that he's done. To marvel, how has he done it? There's an article, a transcription of a dialogue that Prabhupada had with one German professor, Professor Durkheim. I'm not sure what Professor Durkheim's field was. Some kind of religion professor. Maybe Indology professor or something. And Prabhupada was asking Professor Durkheim, what is the purpose of knowledge? What is the purpose of knowledge? Very fundamental question. And Durkheim was saying, there's no purpose, just knowledge for knowledge's sake. And Prabhupada said, no, there must be practical application of that knowledge. For what purpose is knowledge to be applied? And it was back and forth from Professor Durkheim. It was just, doesn't have to be a purpose, just to know. Whatever it is that one knows should be applied, and there's a particular application purpose. Prabhupada was arguing. Finally, Prabhupada made such a strong argument he gave up. Okay, knowledge that has a purpose. But then, what is that purpose of knowledge? Or what is the end of knowledge? What does Bhagavad Gita teach? What is the end of knowledge? Bahunam jnanam ante jnanam mam prapanchate. The purpose of knowledge is to surrender to Krishna. Mam prabandhite. What is that knowledge? Vasude sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. The atom is spirit and the controller. It's all Krishna or Krishna's energy. The purpose of knowledge is surrender to Krishna. Impetus for surrender to Krishna. How wonderful is Krishna? Let me surrender unto him. The either implicit or explicit application purpose of knowledge is to feed one's pride or to replace God. Now I know and I can do it myself. Please step aside, God, and I can do it. One of our temple devotees, last time I was here visiting Chicago, just mentioned to me one article that appeared in, I think it was in Hindu Today or India Today, in India Abroad or one of those magazines. It was describing that some recent research has shown that particularly appropriate for the Midwest, genetically engineered corn, which has been genetically engineered so that it's not susceptible to a certain insect that eats the corn. It makes it resistant to corn, resistant to the insect. It's been shown that people who eat that corn suffer the following health problems because their bodies would normally be resistant to, they're more susceptible to some diseases. So it was done in order to help the farmers of the Midwest make more money because the insect was eating their crops. And now people that eat the corn are getting more diseases. So the God Project backfired. The research workers got their money, the farmers got their money, the people paid for both. And the doctor's bills and their poor health. They paid triple. The knowledge for knowledge sake notion is a Plutonic idea that falls apart because there's always mixed with passion. The mode of goodness is always mixed with passion. There's always some fruit of purpose and some ignorance mixed. Even if it's the real thing of the mode of goodness, knowledge for knowledge sake. So the cure, the remedy for that is knowledge with a specific purpose, the purpose of strengthening the motivation for surrender to the personality of Godhead. That's why Maharaj Pariksit is asking. That which he already knows because he's been well trained. But he wants the realization. He wants the relationship with the personality of Godhead. The conclusion is, therefore, that a serious devotee must first approach a spiritual master who is not only well-versed in Vedic literature, but is also a great devotee with factual realization of the Lord and his different energies. Without the help of such a devotee, spiritual master, one cannot make progress in the transcendental science of the Lord. And a bona fide spiritual master like Jukadeva Goswami does not speak about the Lord only in the matter of his internal potencies, but also explains how he associates with his external potencies. Meaning, he doesn't just speak about pastimes that Krishna performs, very confidential pastimes with confidential intimate exchanges with his devotees, as in Bhagavad Katha recitals that just go to that portion of the Bhagavatam, but the valuable association of with spiritual masters where this understanding of the Lord's lotus feet. The first two cantos are nicely described, because in approaching the Lord's lotus feet, it means the mood of service, right? You approach a saintly person's lotus feet, or the Lord's lotus feet, it's the mood of service. And when the mood of service is awakened, you have access to the Lord. When you're at His feet, you have access to Him. But if one doesn't have that awakened realization of the genuine mood of service, then the mood of enjoyment will still be there. And go to other portions of the Bhagavatam, and the mood of enjoyment is going to cover who the Lord really is and what's really happening when He's exchanging with His devotees. It'll either seem fantastic or in some way taken in a material way, in a wrong way. The Lord's pastimes, last paragraph. The Lord's pastimes in His internal potency are displayed in His activities in Vrindavan. But His external potential works are directed in His feature of Karna Dakshaya Vishnu, Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, and Shira Dakshaya Vishnu, the Purusha avatars. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, that's one of our great acharyas, offers his good counsel to the interested Vaishnavas when he says that they should not be interested in hearing only about the Lord's activities like Rasalila, but must be keenly interested in His pastimes, in His features of the Purusha avatars, in connection with Srishti Tattva, or His creation functions, as is being demonstrated here by Maharaj Pariksit and Shukadeva Goswami. The other is very attractive. And it's easy to listen to Krishna's pastimes. It was this past Sunday. I was in Orlando, Florida. We have a small center in Orlando, Florida. And I was conducting the Sunday program. And I'm used to it. Many of the same people come again week after week. So they already have some basic understanding. So I spoke about and made a picture presentation, PowerPoint presentation on Kaliya Damana, Lila Krishna's subduing the Kaliya serpent. And in the audience there were two college students, American fellows. And had I known that they were in the audience, I would have taken another subject. Because I could feel the energy coming from them. You know, Krishna's dancing on the hoods of a serpent with 1,000 heads and the whole Lila. The bashing of his head and the wives of the Kaliya serpent and the prayers. It's taken by such persons as mythology and fantastic. A nice story for kids, but not to be taken seriously by a learned person. So, when one goes through this very carefully presented, inconceivable otherwise relationship with giving the Lord and His energies, and all the other subject matters of the Bhagavatam, the details of the cosmic manifestation, Vedic cosmography, with detailed descriptions of distances and sizes of planets and so forth and so on, with great precision in explaining these things, the same sages are not going to be interested in mythology and fairy tales. But they'll be equipped to hear the subject matter of Krishna's pastimes because they've done their ABCs. So the Bhagavatam is meant to be read like that, systematically. And that's what we're going to be doing this weekend. Any comments or questions from anyone? Very interesting looking device. What's that?
An envelope clip.
Does it work? Okay, good. So, you have a question?
In the course of the lecture, you were talking about knowledge for knowledge's sake. Mm. You said it's, well, the knowledge is the more of goodness it gets mixed with passion and ignorance.
Yeah.
If you don't mind, could you elaborate a little bit more?
Passion means I want something from it. It may be as simple as recognition from other people that I know so many things. Or maybe I want to control matter so that I can enjoy matter in a better way. I want the gratification of matter manipulation. Or ignorance, just getting the wrong idea altogether. You know, that the absence of spiritual conception. Ignorance. Accepting the covering to be the self. Accepting the effect to be the cause. Feeding my desire to put God out of existence. Yes.
Is it only by choice that the living entity gets entangled into the material world, or is there some other reason that the influence of the external energy of the Lord upon the living entity?
What do you think?
What I've been reading, it's only by choice, but okay. Then
the external energy is exerting its influence regardless of the disposition of the free will choice. But that the material energy cannot affect. Like the example that Prabhupada gives is the example of a doctor where there's a what's it called? An epidemic. And he takes some system that he becomes immunized against whatever that disease is, and then he goes into the diseased place. And he doesn't become affected by the disease. The material energy does its thing, but a liberated soul can enter into the material energy for submission to on behalf of the Lord, and remain unaffected. Material energy does its thing, but it doesn't affect him. There's dualities, but he doesn't identify with those dualities. It gets cold or hot. There's pleasure or there's pain. There's duality in this material world. The transcendental soul doesn't identify with it. Yes, Parasu.
Maharaj, unless one is pure enough that by getting some knowledge there is always a chance of becoming pride
there is certainty.
Only I think that like when I read scriptures or gain some knowledge, only I check that feeling of pride or that I know this now or I'm reading this.
Well, you know the answer. The answer is was already discussed here. Through the medium of the service mood, then this knowledge is being presented to you with the opportunity to, by descending mercy, grab a hold of this knowledge like a rope handed to a person at the bottom of a well and grab on and get out of the well. It's not another commodity for you to own and control and manipulate. Pridefully now I know this. And very soon I'm going to do so many more things. And then I'll step on the heads of everybody else because I know more than they do. So that's an exaggeration or, you know, it's a description of a mentality, but the devotional mentality should replace that mentality. And that requires cultivation. It's not that, gee, because I have contamination in my heart, and if I learn something from scriptures, it's going to feed that contamination of heart and I'll become more prideful and better not read scripture. I better not chant because along with the creeper of devotion, also weeds will grow and I don't want any weeds to grow in my heart. I already have enough weeds. I better not associate with devotees because but while taking these very powerful facilities up, one should be careful, and the care goes particularly to the mood of service. And there's, you know, built into the system, there's corrective measures. The material energy has its role to play, that is, we learn the hard way. We can learn by hearing, or we can learn by suffering. It's much nicer to learn by hearing. But the other option is also there. If we're attentive, we'll even sense pride growing and the effects of it. We're attentive. And then immediately, as soon as one sees that that's there, immediately, no hesitation. So the third time, immediately, one takes action. Yes.
But since the gratification in performing the devotional service itself, I can speak for others, but personally, I just started chanting recently.
Uh-huh.
And it makes me, I think I feel better because I've chanted, even though I completely did not understand the entire purpose.
Okay.
So isn't there a gratification inherently built into
that? No, that's it's not that we're supposed to be morose. Happy is the natural state of the soul. And when there's relief from the covering of the material energy, the natural happiness of the soul awakens or becomes exhibited. That's wanted. Susukam kartam abhyayam, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Rajavidya Rajaguya Pavitram Idamutama Pratyakshalamam Dhanam Susukram Kartavavyam. It's meant to be not only sukha, but susukha. Very joyfully performed. Susukam Kartam Avyayam. So that's not, that's spiritual happiness which is apart from sense gratification. We have a lot of material baggage, and so we want to take credit for everything. This is the pride factor that he's speaking about. Just see what I've done. And you know, fill in the rest of the thought. And that's not spiritual happiness. That's the happiness of pride. And when that happiness of pride enters, you know what happens? That sense of happiness that you are now feeling starts to fade. You think, hey, what's going on? And that's what's going on. The weeds are being nurtured or watered as much as the plant that you want to grow, the creeper that you want to grow is being watered. So you have to do some little gardening. Take this weed, remove it. Take that weed and remove it. And continue the watering process. So there is a qualitative difference between the happiness of devotion and the happiness of pride. Now, that's something that one who's not a devotee doesn't know, because they don't know the happiness of devotion. To them it's just, you know, subtle stuff that doesn't make any sense. But for a devotee, it's very real. There's a qualitative difference between, there's a qualitative difference between selfishness and selflessness, and there's a qualitative difference between the mode of goodness happiness and transcendental happiness. The happiness that says, in my relationship with Krishna, that's my real source of happiness. Say it a little bit differently. We all know what that sense of contentment is that comes when we do some selfless act for another person. There's a sense of happiness. According to Bhagavad Gita, it's a conditioning influence of the mode of goodness where one becomes conditioned to that sense of happiness. The sense of happiness is rooted in the bodily conception, I'm doing it. Not, I'm the instrument of the Supreme Lord through whom He is doing something. It's, I'm doing it. And there's a contentedness that comes from that. Because I have, and another doesn't have, out of my largesse I'm giving to one who doesn't have. It's pride. And one is being conditioned in that way. And there's another happiness that doesn't factor that at all. It's that Krishna is pleased. And consciousness doesn't move from that position. That's a transcendental happiness. My relationship with Krishna. That's wanted. That's spiritual happiness. And largely in our conditioned state, what we experience is but a reflection of that spiritual happiness, because we're still carrying mature conceptions about ourselves. So even that happiness that you're experiencing, according to Nectar Devotion, It's a reflection of spiritual. It's Krishna's way of encouraging you. Keep going. Because beyond that little glimmer of happiness, there's the illumination of Ananda. Sachit Ananda Vigraha. Yes, go ahead.
Maharaj, you talked about spiritual happiness, but until, at least I have not yet realized that state of spiritual happiness. So, till I reach that state, what should be my attitude towards material enjoyment, provided it is in the realm of regulative principles? Should I consciously abhor it, or should it go hand in hand, or?
The advice of the Bhagavatam is twofold, regulated and reduced. And even the regulated should be regulated by the codes of scripture, but as far as possible, Bhaktisiddhanta's phrase is dovetailed, so that Krishna service can be done. I like music, and so I'll perform, I'll find a medium of musical expression that can be used in service to Krishna. Now, while doing that, and you can fill in, you know, the blank with any other thing, when you do that, cultivate that it should be done for Krishna's pleasure. The stronger side of the dovetail is on the for Krishna's pleasure side. Not abhor it, but dovetail it. In the honor of the codes of religion and by the guidance of spiritual teacher, and try to work on the devotional side. And one will feel a greater sense of happiness and will perform the activity even more attractively and better and for other satisfaction as well as one's own satisfaction, if the stronger the Krishna factor is.
I have a similar question to him. For those people in the material world, they know the books and knowledge like he explained, that they can read the books and gain knowledge and apply it, whatever.
Good.
Do we have anything similar to in spiritual world that we can keep on growing?
Yes. The form of it is different, but the principle of it is not. The way that Prabhupada has described, the spiritual world is not static, it's dynamic. There's forever growth of consciousness and growth of getting further training in how to serve Krishna more nicely, more effectively, you know. And there are persons waiting for us to, you know, give us that association. It's not just like kindergarten and, you know, primary school, middle school. It's not that kind of thing. There's some structure to it, but it's not so structured like that. It's association and relationships. And just like, for example, what Prabhupada has described is when one comes to the stage where one's material attraction has subsided and awakening the stage of love and God takes place. After this life, one enters into the pastimes that Krishna performs in this created realm, this Boma Lila. And amongst those associates of Krishna in this Boma Lila, there are perfected souls that train the newcomers, so to speak, in the ways of devotional service. There are different degrees of perfection. It gets really refined in the section of the Bhagavatam where Krishna calls upon the gopis to join him in the dead of night. He plays his flute. and there are different grades of devotees, or different responses amongst the gopis. Some are detained by their husbands, some abandon their husbands, some leave their bodies and go to him in their spiritual form. Some are restrained and can't go. And the acharyas describe this is because there are different degrees of spiritual attainment. And that intensification of feelings of separation from Krishna for those that are detained, that intense feeling of separation burns to a finish whatever residual material attraction or material, you know, complication with the material energy may have still been with them. The Rishachari gopis, those who, the sages that were, had approached Ram in the forest, the Dandak forest, they approached Ram and they were so attracted by Ram's transcendental beauty that as sages they were completely off the bodily platform and requested the opportunity to enter into a relationship as Sita had. And Ram smiled and said, that's not possible in this lila, because I've taken the vow of having only one wife, but in my next lila, you will have that opportunity. You will take birth and that the spiritual desire that you have will be fulfilled. And so in their next life, they became gopis, but they were wedded. And because they were wedded, they were restrained, but they overcome that, they overcame that restraint and were trained by the perfected gopi. So this is very esoteric. But it's, you know, your question is begging that kind of an answer. Yes, there is further training. And further training and further training and further training. And further ecstasy and further intimacy. And it's a very dynamic situation. It's not at all, you know, repetitious and boring. What's next? Yes.
Shalini mentioned how Parikshit Maharaj, when he was hearing from Shukadeva Goswami, he was realizing what he heard. So I'm wondering if the qualification, I mean, Parikshit Maharaj was already a very elevated devotee.
Extremely elevated.
So is it an, only that combination that
it's only in that situation where the fullness of realization comes. Conversely, you know, it's like, so it's not an on-off switch, it's a variable switch, a dimmer switch. Does that answer your question?
So the
in our case, we don't have the credentials of Maharaj Prakshan. Is it useless for us to hear Srimad Bhagavatam because we don't have Maharaj Prakshan's credentials? Will we get any realization at all? The answer is yes. We'll get purification and realization. Maharaj Prakshit didn't need purification. He got full dose of realization. So in our case, we go on hearing faithfully, understanding, like, you know, the question the Madhusudan was asking, how do we go on with the process of hearing? Where it's not feeding our false ego. We go on hearing with the understanding this will purify my existence. And sure enough it does. And it will more swiftly purify existence the more eager we are to be Maharaj Prakshit-like, you know, be wanting to serve the Lord. Not just wanting more information. Did I address it?
Yeah.
Did I miss something?
Well, it's probably more of a comment. Like, for me, in my own personal case, when I sense a disconnect with myself, then I find it very hard to bring whatever I'm hearing into the context of my own life. Like, when I'm more connected to myself, then whatever I'm hearing makes much more much more relevant, much more fun. So I find like two things. One is connecting with oneself and then hearing about Krishna. So it's like, so it's, I guess they help each other and aid each other. Or, because I also heard that just hearing about Krishna is one. So which comes first?
It's purifying in any circumstance. When there's a verse, excuse me, there's a line in the purport where Prabhupada says, hearing is both the means and the end. Mm-hmm. Anyway. So it's both. It's not either or. So supposing, that's, you know, use your example, supposing Nanda Vrindavan is feeling disconnected with herself, should she, at that position, not hear Srimad Bhagavatam? Because it's not going more deeply, and no, she should hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And when she's in the other extreme, should she hear it? Yes, she should hear it. So in any circumstance of life, one should hear it. And what does that do? It fixes, one of the things it does is it fixes the quality of goodness as opposed to that other disturbing feature that is a disconnect feature. Lord of passion and the Lord of ignorance. So regulative devotional service is always recommended. Will the subjective experience be different in different states of consciousness? Yes. Is there absolute benefit regardless of the state of consciousness? Yes. And even if Ananda Vrindavan or any one of us are in a struggling state, as you're putting it, disconnected state, what are we to do? That's Maharaj Pariksit's question from the last chapter. This is what we're to do. Because it will help to awaken that dormant spiritual consciousness. Which is the real in touch with oneself position. In touch with one's spiritual self, spiritual reality. True sound vibration. Now back again to the first position. Are there qualitative differences in hearing? Yes. It's real easy for me to understand this in part because it's something that I understood since, like, you know, before I even knew Krishna consciousness. The realization is, if there's something that's good, you should do it regularly. Not sometimes, because I don't want to wear it out. Or something. If it's good, you should do it regularly. Is exercise good? Do it regularly. Whatever's good, do it regularly. Then you don't have to do it in big bursts. It just becomes part of maintenance. It's good. You do it every, you know, regularly, with every day or whatever it is, whatever. Weekly. Something that's good for you, you do it regularly. It's something that's spiritually good. Satyakam. Kirtanam Tama. Okay? Not bad. 8:30. What should we do next? Is there...
I'm not quite sure how to ask this question. How does simplicity and trying to understand these intricate subject matter. He said that unless one has a very strong foundation of understanding how the Lord does the creation and understands this, then one will not have a proper conception of all the transcendental pastimes. But one could think, well, gee, I mean, I'm just a simple man, I can't really understand, you know, all these intricate things.
It's not a matter of being a complex. Complex people can understand this and simple people cannot. So if you're a simple person, don't even bother. That's not a... You might understand it. It's a spiritual message. Not a message of complexity. The creation is certainly complex. But, you know, Krishna's pastimes, all of the spiritual potencies are being enacted. But it's not the requirement is not that you be a PhD. You just have the intellectual powers of processing many things, many, you know, subtle things, and then you can understand this. If that were so, then a lot of PhDs would be very elevated devotees. Not so. Not a qualification or a disqualification. The marveling at the inextricable connectedness of all things with the Supreme Lord is the main message. And complicated people aren't necessarily going to capture that. And simple persons are more likely to capture that. And especially when one hears it from a Shukadeva Goswami-like person. That's the message. The complexity is not the message. Although there's detail for to be disclosed for those persons who have detailed capacity. Is my going back to Godhead dependent upon understanding those detailed things? No. But hearing whatever is being presented and capturing the essence of it, that's essential. Like Prabhupada put it in simple languages. Prabhupada said, everyone knows that God is great, but how great is God that they do not know? Or, in my practical upbringing, the understanding that God has created heaven and earth, that I grew up with, God has created heaven and earth. But then being challenged in science class, no he didn't. I had nothing to stand on. So how great is God? This is how great God is. And it's inconceivable. And it's not like I get really snobby and say, I can understand it because I'm a devotee. You can't understand it because you're not a devotee. Only devotees can understand it. You're not a devotee. It's an understanding of a relationship that doesn't require complexity and understands devotion. It requires devotion.
So as Queen Kunti is praying, I'm just a simple woman.
And with that simplicity, look what she understood. With great scholars, with complex capacity, can't begin. Kirtan, and then we'll take Aarti upstairs. All right, Aarti. Will we all fit? Will we sit up there? We can fit in that.
I just said.
Here we go. Right, the upstairs. Shiva Prabhupada.